You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey, I'm Steph.
I'm Alex.
And this is Not Today.
And we're live.
Hey.
How you doing?
Great. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good.
Awesome.
I'm here for another story that I didn't have to work for.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And I'm here to tell you that story.
That's right. But first, tell us about the other stories.
Bonus episode number 51, I believe, should be out now over on Patreon, patreon.com/nottodaypodcast. And if you can't tell by the number, there are 50 other bonus episodes that you can tune into. And they're really good because our patrons vote on the stories that they want to hear. So if you want in on that fun, head over there, check it out. I don't think you'll regret it. In fact, I know you won't.
You won't, and nor will you hear an ad.
That's true. And it comes out a day early, or our normal episodes do. So, hey, lots of perks happening over there. Check it out.
So many.
But you know the spiel. We say it every single time. So why don't we jump in to our story today?
Let's do it.
Okay. On September 29th, 2016, 45-year-old Elizabeth Wetlaufer voluntarily reported herself as a serial killer to Toronto police. She requested an interview and admitted that she had killed at least 8 elderly people that she cared for as a nurse. At first, police weren't sure if she was telling the truth. Upon first glance, she definitely didn't seem like the type, and her story was pretty unbelievable. Elizabeth Wetlaufer had never been under suspicion of any crime, and she was not someone that the police would have suspected to be responsible for something so heinous. And yet she had produced a 4-page handwritten confession, detailing how she killed 8 times and attempted to kill another 6. She was convinced God had sent her on a mission to kill some of her patients. FBI profilers would describe a serial killer as historically white males, and though this is not exclusive, with ages often ranging from mid-20s to mid-30s, some formal education past high school with educated parents, and Elizabeth did not fit that mold. Elizabeth went by Beth. She had striking blue eyes, she wore glasses, she was a larger woman with short brown hair that was beginning to gray. She seemed calm and fairly friendly. She just didn't look like someone you should be afraid of. But if her story was true, police had not heard anything about it before now. There had been no complaints or reports made, which meant Beth would have been operating completely undetected during her crimes. The only evidence they had at the time was the written confession and Beth sitting in front of them telling her accounts of the events. Detective Constable Nathan Herrett was the one to interview Beth, and at first it seemed as if he didn't believe her. He was very calm and told her she wasn't under arrest, the door was unlocked, and she could leave or stop talking to them at any moment.
This is, on its face, so bizarre.
Yeah, extremely bizarre.
So she killed 8?
Mm-hmm.
And tried with 6 other people.
That's what she said.
So she's tried 14 times with varying degrees of success, right?
Correct.
And has now come to the conclusion that she's going to tell on herself.
Yes.
Why?
Well, I'll tell you why.
I mean, it just, for any serial killer profile, like if you're cold enough to kill that many people, why are you telling on yourself? Also, there was no suspicion at all.
None.
They had no idea.
Mm-hmm. That's why police didn't really believe her at first.
Right, which is hilarious that they're like, they get like a confession dropped in their lap and they're like, hold on. We're not sure, right?
Well, yeah.
We're kind of coming on the other side of it.
Because she could have been someone who was just, you know, mentally ill, who was making up a story and whatever. And she certainly was mentally ill, but unfortunately her story was not made up. So I'm going to take you back to the beginning.
Okay.
Elizabeth Tracy May Wetlaufer was born and raised in Zora Township, a rural community near Woodstock, Ontario. Growing up, she had a somewhat normal upbringing. However, she was raised in a strictly religious Baptist household, which hugely shaped who she was. A former friend, Glenn Hart, recalled Beth was also a major target for bullies growing up, which led to a lot of self-confidence issues. Her strict religious background made her feel very confined by societal norms and expectations, which proved to be difficult because when Beth was a teenager, she realized that she was attracted to women. She did everything she could to push those feelings down. However, at one point, she developed romantic feelings for a neighbor of hers. But sadly for Beth, the feeling was not reciprocated, which only made her feel worse about who she actually was. Beth had a lot of shame around her identity, and she later told police she did a lot of praying about it, she read the Bible over and over, and got very involved with her church. Which is really sad. That really sucks for her. But after graduating from Huron Park Secondary School in the mid-1980s, she went on to earn a bachelor's degree in religious education counseling from London Baptist Bible College. Even though she was an adult by that point, her father still kept a very close eye on her. He apparently even had inside sources at her college that would report back to him with what Beth had been doing on campus. And when someone shared with him that Beth had been attending a gay-friendly church with a girlfriend, he was extremely upset. Her father pulled her out of school immediately and sent her to a conversion camp. She ended up finishing that program, and because of that, her father allowed her to go back to college. But at that point, Beth had crippling amounts of shame and had become depressed and started to really hate herself. After graduating, Beth went on to study nursing at Conestoga College, and by the late 90s, she had her RN. In 1997, she got married to a man named Donnie. And by 2007, they were separated when Donnie found conversation between Beth and another woman online, and they were divorced by 2008. The fact that she was actually a closeted lesbian really didn't help their marriage flourish, so it was a sinking ship from the beginning. Another major contributing factor was that Beth wanted children and Donnie didn't, which is not really something you can compromise on.
Wow. I mean, there were so many things that were wrong from the beginning.
Yeah.
It's like, one of the biggest questions in a marriage, even for a straight couple.
Yeah.
And then on top of it, you are so clearly gay.
Yes. It's super gay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And at that time, Beth was also trying to treat her borderline personality disorder and was dealing with an opioid addiction. So that was just the tip of the iceberg, which is a crazy tip of an iceberg, but...
But the iceberg is so much bigger than we imagined.
Yes.
What's up, baby? It's Bretzky, and I'm here to tell you that SpinQuest.com is giving out free sweeps coins. All you gotta do is purchase a $10 coin pack, and guess what? They're gonna give you the coins from a $30 coin pack. That lets you play all your favorite games like Blackjack, Wanted, Dead or Wild, and we're talking real cash prizes, baby. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
She had become addicted to hydromorphone, which the brand names of that drug are Dilaudid or Excelgo. It's a powerful opioid used to treat moderate to severe pain, often when other treatments fail. It works by binding to CNS receptors to alter pain perception and is significantly stronger than morphine and carries high risks of addiction, misuse, and life-threatening respiratory depression. Her opioid addiction began during her nursing career. She had tons of access to drugs, and she began stealing them. She spent a lot of time at home alone after that, binge drinking, eating, and drug taking, which resulted in her getting her license restricted early into her becoming a nurse. But even with that license restriction, Beth still managed to find work in care homes. So I guess she wasn't working at like a straight-up hospital, but she was finding work in nursing homes. Beth ended up starting a relationship with a woman around this time, and they got an apartment together across town. And after living together for a while, they apparently got engaged. So this was the first time Beth was able to truly be herself, which was great. However, there was a lot more going on. For one, her family certainly didn't support her and her fiancé's relationship, telling people Beth was just renting out the spare room in her apartment to a person in need. And even though she was in this new relationship and could finally live her truth, she was still struggling. Her parents never accepted her, and also divorces can be stressful even when they need to happen. And this relationship did not last long. She felt like she couldn't be open about her sexuality, and she ultimately really struggled with her relationship and as a result felt extremely isolated and alone. In 2007, when Beth was about 40 years old, she was hired onto the staff at Crescent Care, a long-term care home in Woodstock. She worked there as a registered nurse, which involved taking care of people, handling all their medication and whatever else they needed. Ultimately, she was a nurse and a person that people trusted. She was assigned to the night shift, and she was initially regarded by coworkers as caring, friendly, and professional. But what they didn't know was that Beth was relying very heavily on alcohol and drugs to keep herself together. And even though she seemed mostly normal at work, she was also dealing with a lot of mental health problems. She was miserable and extremely angry and was not getting the support that she needed. Her mental health was deteriorating by the day, and it got so bad that Beth began to believe that God was telling her that certain people needed to die. And not just that, but if she killed or hurt certain patients, she was actually doing something good. This was God's will. She said she, quote, had a sense after her marriage that God was going to use me for something. And since she knew that she'd get in trouble if anyone discovered what she was doing, whether it was God's will or not, she hid it. She would inject patients with insulin to make them overdose. She'd inject them either in their hip or other parts of their body that was concealed, or better yet, she would just insert it into their IV. She said the voices in her head told her to do it, and then afterwards, she wouldn't feel remorse. She would hear laughter in her head and feel giddy.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Jesus.
As a nurse, Elizabeth knew that insulin got absorbed in the body, and while it can kill, depending on the dosage, it will also dissipate, making it extremely hard to detect. So Elizabeth had a lot of power in this sense, which was something she never had in her life. This woman lacked power in every aspect of her life except for this. And she worked in a place where it wasn't uncommon for people to die. They were all elderly patients, so nobody suspected any kind of foul play. Her first victim was 87-year-old Clotilda Adriano. She was spending her final years in the care home with her sister Albina, and they were both doing fine health-wise and were loved by their other caretakers. But one evening, Beth felt what she described as a red surge. She drew insulin into a syringe, which was something Clotilda definitely did not need. The first attempts weren't even so much about Beth feeling like she wanted this person to die. She mostly wanted to see what would happen. She didn't know enough about insulin or body chemistry to know exactly how much she needed to use to kill someone. And so she was just kind of guessing.
And she called it a red surge?
Mm-hmm. That's what she said she felt when she got an urge to kill someone. A red surge built up inside her.
What is this, Dexter? Like, what's happening?
You're right.
Insane. Well, clearly insane. But nobody else can even sense that there's extreme mental illness happening?
Not in a big way. I mean, maybe they knew she was dealing with something. And we're going to get into some moments where the mask kind of slipped a little bit. But for the most part, her coworkers liked her.
That's truly crazy.
Yeah. She gave Clotilda the extra insulin and then waited to see what happened. And Beth did this more than once to her, but she survived after two attempts on her life. Beth considered the fact that Clotilda had lived, it was fate. And also God's will, so she got to live another day. Beth claimed she was angry and thought Clotilda was the person God wanted to die, but at that point, she knew that God obviously wanted her to live, so she moved on. This time, she set her sights on Clotilda's sister, Albina. Albina was younger than her sister, around 80 years old, and she was diabetic, so she required insulin as part of her treatment. And thankfully, like her sister, Albina survived the attack. Beth still hadn't quite worked out the amount of insulin she needed to use to kill a person. And the reason she was able to kind of just experiment with the amount of insulin she gave, or even give patients insulin who weren't diabetic, was because Crescent Care didn't keep track of their insulin. They just had insulin pens in the fridge and in a drawer for nurses to administer as they needed to. So if she took it, or when she took it, no one knew.
That's so crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't even like it's the early days of insulin.
No.
You know?
Yeah.
Like you should have logs for every drug that you keep in your facility, no?
Absolutely. But they didn't for insulin.
Also, I feel like we've told a few stories where it's like, oh, well, if you just give someone enough insulin, they'll die and nobody will know that it was you because it dissipates.
Yeah, we talked about it not too long ago, actually. It was the story of Rachel Booth and her roommate, Janie Lynn Ridd. Janie gave Rachel insulin as a way to attempt to murder her, but she was unsuccessful. So yeah, that was episode 271, if you're interested. But Beth had plenty more opportunity to figure out this dosage. As a nurse, Beth presented herself as caring, proficient, and professional. But in reality, she had unchecked rage and an emptiness that she had no healthy ways to cope with. She wasn't going to mess up the dosage on her next victim, 84-year-old James Silcox. And he was also someone that Beth really didn't like. In the care home, she worked with a lot of really difficult patients. There were many elderly people who were suffering from dementia, and in James's case, according to Beth, he was kind of a creepy old man who would regularly have outbursts. Beth didn't always see James, since he wasn't her patient, but from what people told her, he would regularly grab nurses' butts or breasts and would say inappropriate things about his wife. James did have dementia, so he wasn't acting out on purpose. He was in this care home for a reason, because he needed to be. But, you know, dementia makes people do pretty crazy things sometimes. But that afternoon, Beth had set her sights on James. He had apparently grabbed her inappropriately, and she, quote, got that feeling inside that this was his time to go. So Beth doubled the dosage of insulin she had originally used, and she injected James around 10:30 p.m. that night, and by 3 a.m., James was dead. He wasn't even a diabetic patient, so he wouldn't typically get insulin injections like many of the other patients, so Beth had to hide it. But since he had been recovering from a recent surgery, it was believed his death was the result of complications from that surgery. In reality, he had become Beth's first kill, and she had to be the one to tell his family that he had passed. But that didn't bother her, because she was doing what she believed was God's will. She was sharp enough to know nobody would question her patients dying, because they were obviously in this hospital for a reason. But as together as she typically appeared, she would occasionally let the mask slip a little bit. There were a few occasions when her coworkers smelled alcohol on her, or even found her passed out in the stairwell with a heavy alcohol smell on her breath. But no one ever reported her.
That's insane.
Yep.
You're passed out on the job, and you smell like booze, and you are supposedly having people's lives in your hands. That's really concerning.
Super concerning, but...
what I would file under fireable behavior.
Absolutely it is. Just before Christmas of 2007, Beth set her sights on 84-year-old Maurice Granite. Once again, she really didn't like him, which, unsurprisingly, many of her victims were patients that she did not like. She said, quote, he was another one who liked to grab breasts and asses. And because of that, she thought he needed to be punished. So one fall evening, she gave him a very large dose of insulin. He also was not diabetic, but by the next morning, he was in a coma. And then later that afternoon, he passed away. He was officially her second kill. And Beth carried on as usual. She updated her resume on social media sites and described herself as someone who was assessing patients, administering medications, performing prescribed treatments, communicating with patients, families, and healthcare professionals, and supervising care staff. She seemed to be the perfect nurse. Around that time, Beth also took up a new hobby, writing poetry and posting it online under a pseudonym, Betty Weston. And unsurprisingly, her poetry was extremely dark and had to do with death, power, and having control. In one of her poems, titled Inevitable, she wrote, quote, she watches some life drain from the notch in his neck vein. As it soothingly pools, it smothers her pain. Sweet stiletto so sharp craves another cut. Obeying a call, she moves to his gut. Blade traces a line from navel to spine, grating on rib bones, slicing intestine. Heartbeats then sprays as this next victim pays her deft dagger's bill. Does it quench her craze? All others are safe from obsession's greed until she hears again from her knife and her need.
Wow.
Yeah.
Bars.
Okay.
I could say it's kind of good.
Kind of bars, but...
I mean, it's... it's really dark.
Super dark. But I mean, she wasn't writing it under her name and it didn't outwardly say exactly what she was doing. Plenty of people write dark poetry, but...
this one seems to be pretty specific. Like she's directly referencing...
killing someone?
With injections.
Yeah. I mean, this is like, it feels like she's reliving what she's been doing. So it obviously seems like she enjoys the act of killing even if she thinks it's God's will, which, you know, that's her reasoning. But she's also just picking patients that she doesn't like and obviously reliving it in her poetry. 56-year-old Wayne Hedges had been at Crescent Care since 2000. He required insulin as part of his treatment and was also a diagnosed schizophrenic. So he, again, was not one of Beth's favorites. She claimed, quote, he could be uncooperative, and I gave him a large overdose because I thought it was his turn to go. Wayne survived, but Beth was far from finished. 56-year-old Michael Priddle was next. He suffered from Huntington's disease, and luckily he also survived. She still wasn't entirely sure what dosage was correct and would occasionally not give enough to cause death. And death by insulin overdose is not quick and painless. Symptoms included confusion, severe headaches, abdominal pain, nausea, seizures, difficulty seeing, chills, anxiety, shaking, and more. And Beth obviously knew that what she was doing was wrong on some level and knew that she wanted it to stop. In 2007, she ended up telling a woman that she had been dating what had been happening, but apparently all this woman said was, "You need to stop doing that. You don't want to get caught."
Really, lady?
And that's not the first time that something like that would happen, where she would tell someone and they would not respond in a way that you would like.
What? I just can't imagine that.
I agree.
Like, hey, just don't do that anymore. You're killing people?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're like treating it the same as, I don't know, littering.
Right. Hey, just don't do that anymore.
Don't, yeah, just don't, next time, don't do that.
Yeah, she said you don't want to get caught. That's your concern?
What? Hello?
Insulin wasn't the only way Beth would attack her patients either. And this detail came out much later after she was already in prison, but it was learned that police determined she used a pillow to smother a patient at Crescent Care at some point during her employment there. The patient has not been identified, but was a resident at Crescent Care and survived the attack.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's way more involved than injecting someone with too much insulin. That's like personal.
Yeah, and it takes a long time.
Yeah, it does. Like multiple minutes.
The joy that she's taking in this, doesn't surprise you that she did that.
No. And thankfully, this person did survive the attack. But I mean, how did she go on then after that for so long if that person survived being almost smothered? Don't you think that they would say, hey, I almost got smothered?
They must not have seen her?
Yeah, maybe.
Or they were sleeping already?
Maybe. Meanwhile, Beth's life was still spiraling. She was still abusing drugs and alcohol and attempted to meet new women online, but any relationship that started did not last long. She had a string of failed attempts at relationships, and one woman complained that Beth came onto her far too quickly. But Beth ended up meeting a woman named Sheila Andrews on a dating site, and Sheila lived 28 hours away in Prince Albert. And they really connected online. But they hadn't met in person yet, so Sheila invited Beth out to see her one weekend to test out this budding relationship, and as soon as Beth got off the plane, Sheila felt like something was off with her. She didn't know what, obviously, but she was like, something's a little weird here.
Beth, yeah, like, maybe she's just weird. Maybe we don't click.
Yeah.
Or maybe she kills people.
Maybe she's a serial killer. Beth went completely overboard, telling Sheila that she told everyone at work about how much she loved her. They were going to finally get together and live happily ever after. This is like right after getting off the plane, basically.
Whoa. So you're like in a Disney fantasy already.
Well, yeah, she's in a fantasy always. So
yeah.
They had only ever spoken online. And so this was essentially their first date. And she's like, we're going to live happily ever after. I love you so much. I told everyone about you. This is amazing. And Sheila's like, hang on, pump the brakes just a little bit. There were a few other things that didn't sit well with Sheila as well. She took her around the area and introduced Beth to her mother, who coincidentally was also living in a nursing home. But Beth wasn't very excited about any of these plans. She apparently sulked in the corner of Sheila's mom's room. And then after they left, told Sheila that she never wanted to go back there again, which confused Sheila, rightfully so, because she knew that Beth worked in a nursing home herself as a nurse, so why did she have such a strong reaction to being in one?
Right. Also, it's her mother.
Right.
Like, we're gonna see her again.
Yeah, we're just visiting my mom, which is like super normal.
Huh?
Yeah. Sheila expected Beth and her mother would really hit it off because Beth worked in nursing homes and was around older people all the time. So she's like, maybe my mom and her will be really great friends. And then Beth was like sulking in the corner and being super weird. And it was a complete disaster.
Well, a little did you know.
Right. Beth also threw a handful of childlike tantrums during her visit. And between all the love bombing, weirdness, and tantrums, Sheila was very quickly over it. And at the end of the weekend, she told Beth that she wasn't interested in seeing her anymore. And that was just another blow to Beth's ego. She did not deal with repeated rejection well. And she decided the best thing for her to do at that point was throw herself into her work.
What's up, baby? It's Bretzky. And I'm here to tell you that SpinQuest.com is giving out free sweeps coins. All you gotta do is purchase a $10 coin pack. And guess what? They're gonna give you the coins from a $30 coin pack. That lets you play all your favorite games like Blackjack, Wanted, Dead or Wild, and we're talking real cash prizes, baby. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
And for a few years, Beth didn't kill anyone else. But those feelings did not go away. She ended up telling another person about what she had done, and this time it was a teenage coworker. Imagine someone who's like in their 40s and is probably a respected nurse comes to you, and you're a teenager, and
you're
says,
like 19.
Hey, by the way, I kill patients because God tells me to. Or I don't know exactly how she said it, but she definitely like said it in some way.
Yeah, like, hey, maybe don't do that next time.
You don't want to get caught. This was a few years into Beth's killing. This was in 2011. And like Beth's ex, this coworker didn't tell anyone or do anything with this information.
Insane, but I guess more understandable.
Yeah,
like you're
a teenager.
You don't really know what to do. There's no protocol here.
No protocol. You would think that they would at least tell another coworker or something. And then that coworker could then report Beth. But yeah, I think they probably just got really scared and didn't say anything.
Yeah, you're scared for your own safety. I get it. But yeah, this feels like maybe you bring this up to the manager like, hey, Beth's talking about murdering the patients.
Right. Hey, this is not
this
good.
Is strange. Mm-hmm. Seems to go against our oath that we took.
Yeah.
For the whole healthcare thing.
Right.
As a job.
You know, not killing people.
Actually, just not doing any harm.
Right.
Know? Let alone that.
Exactly. And around that time, Beth began killing again. So I don't know if she was telling this person as a way to stop herself, maybe. But then when nothing came of it, she started killing again. Hard to say, but that is around the time that she started killing again. Over the next 3 months, Helen Matheson, Mary Zawinski, and Gladys Millard all became Beth's next victims. According to Beth, Mary was literally asking for it. One night, the 96-year-old Mary told Beth, "I'm going to die tonight. Why don't you get me into the deathbed so I can die?" And Beth took this as a sign from God that it was Mary's turn. And that night, she gave Mary the insulin, and by the next day, she was dead. I feel like that's not the first time I've heard of someone in a nursing home being like, I'm going to die, or like, I want to die.
Oh, yeah.
People say that, like, especially older people, maybe who have, like, health problems or pain or something. Like, people do say that, so.
Yeah. Did she have, like, some dementia, or?
She probably did. Many of her patients did. I don't know for a fact that she did, but she was also 96, so.
Yeah. I mean, you could also just be not in a great, you know, not in a
state of mind.
You know, you could be what would the phrase be? Disconnected from reality,
maybe,
like mentally ill for a temporary period of time.
Sure. Gladys was a type 2 diabetic and was very spunky, and actually someone that Beth really enjoyed. That's like how she was described, as like a spunky woman.
Wait, really?
Yeah, at least for a time Beth really liked her, but then Gladys went downhill with her dementia. And apparently went downhill really fast. And because of that, she became much more difficult of a patient for Beth. She struggled to take her pills, following direction, and was very stubborn. And one evening, Beth got the quote-unquote red surging feeling that Gladys had to go. So it didn't matter if Beth liked you at one point. If you are difficult for her, you're not safe. Next up was Helen Matheson. She was not diabetic, and Helen was described as very easygoing, quiet, and she never caused any sort of issue. And Beth liked her. But one day she was especially angry at work and decided that God was telling her it was Helen's time to go. So after giving Helen a piece of pie and some ice cream, she injected her with insulin. She said Helen never did anything wrong. She just quote unquote got that feeling. By November of 2011, the death count was rising and coworkers were starting to become concerned about Beth. They had noticed some odd behavior. They smelled alcohol on her on a number of occasions, and she was unraveling in more ways than she could conceal. But they weren't connecting any of the weirdness with the deaths of her patients. They just believed five people had died under Beth's care, which was bad luck for her. And again, nobody reported her for anything, even though her drinking on the job definitely should have been addressed at this point. But for some reason, after her fifth murder, Beth's mind shifted, and she started to wonder if God had actually been the one telling her to commit these murders, or if it was actually the devil who had been tricking her the whole time. But even after she started believing it might be the devil, that didn't stop her. She went on to kill 9 victims in total. In October of 2013, 90-year-old Helen Young became Beth's next target. And once again, Beth really didn't like her. She was quote-unquote miserable and unhappy with her life, according to Beth. She didn't like that Helen would regularly scream about wanting to die. She'd repeatedly scream, "Help me, nurse," but she didn't actually need any help. And if a nurse came over to her to see if she needed any help, she would be really nasty and just rude to the nurses. So for that reason, it was her turn. After Helen was Maureen Pickering, another dementia patient that Beth didn't like because of her outbursts. She had a tendency to hit other people, pinch them, or pull hair, and Beth thought maybe if she gave her a bit too much insulin, it could cause some brain damage that would make her less of a pain to her. So I guess in that case, she wasn't trying to kill her, she was just trying to give her brain damage, which is insane. I mean, it's all insane, but that one's not even like, oh yeah, God's telling me to do it. She's like, oh, she's actively a problem for me, so I'm trying to make her not a problem by giving her brain damage. But instead of causing any brain damage, she had a stroke and sadly died 5 days later. Beth's days at Crescent Care were numbered. She had been discovered by management to be giving patients an incorrect dosage of medicine, which ironically was completely unrelated to the insulin murders. This was just a genuine mistake that she had been making. She had a few occasions where she had made medication errors, and since patients kept dying under her care, the nursing home finally fired Beth and reported it to Ontario's College of Nurses. But there was no real penalty. No one suspected that she had done any of this on purpose, and in her boss's mind, she was kind of just an incompetent idiot who had made a ton of errors. But when the hospital fired Beth, she ended up threatening to take legal action, so they decided to settle. They agreed upon giving Beth $2,000 and a good reference, that way she would be on her way, which would essentially just make her someone else's problem. They're like, yeah, I guess we'll give you $2,000 and we'll help you get a new job. We just don't want you here.
Dude, so you're just going to lie.
Yeah, because they don't want to have her take legal action.
I know, but it's just so crazy that as part of a legal agreement, you are going to agree to lie.
Yeah, it's super crazy and unethical.
Right.
And it did not take Beth long to find a new job. She, of course, didn't tell them that she had been killing patients, but she did admit to being fired for making errors when it came to their medications. And yet, she still got a job. There was a shortage of care workers that were qualified nurses, so Beth was in high demand. And her new supervisor was really big on second chances, and they believed she'd be okay. So she ended up at Meadow Park Nursing Home. And just like at Crescent Care, she began killing again. Arpad Horvath was quote-unquote mean and would grab nurses, according to Beth, which made him very difficult to care for.
How many of these patients are just grabbing nurses?
I mean, they're suffering from dementia.
So many of them.
Yeah, but they're all suffering from their brain, like, essentially deteriorating.
Yeah, but it just seems like it's crazy. It's like all of them. The common thread just seems to be if they're a difficult patient, no?
Yeah, totally. I mean, there was like a handful of people that she actually did like. I think there was only one patient among her victims that was described as like an easy patient. But all of the rest of them, even the ones she didn't end up actually murdering, were difficult for her in some way. So that was just, I guess, convenient that God was telling her that those people were supposed to die.
I'm starting to believe that it might be you.
Right. Yeah.
Your subconscious.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps.
What's really sad is Arpad fought the needle at first, but eventually she managed to administer the insulin. She also took the life of 77-year-old Florence Bedall in August of 2014. And for whatever reason, Florence Bedall's murder wasn't in the original confession, and that information came out much later. And most sources only claim that Beth murdered 8 people, but counting Florence, that made 9. This is her 9th murder. Beth decided to quit her job and start, quote-unquote, working on herself and looking inward. Not that she was concerned about killing innocent people, but she realized she needed to get her opioid and alcohol addiction under control. So she ended up spending some time in rehab and then got out in 2015. She then moved on to another job and continued attacking patients, although her final 2 attacks thankfully didn't result in the death of those patients. One of them had been diabetic and was clinging to life when doctors discovered her and found that she had been given way more insulin than was required for her treatment and were able to save her life, although it was a very close call. And what's so strange about Beth's case is that she kept telling people what she was doing and yet nothing was done about it for so many years. In 2015, she had told an ex-boyfriend about her killing, and according to Beth, he told her she should change her job so she didn't have the opportunity. She should just leave her job as a nurse and come live with him. He'd leave his wife and look after Beth. She told him she caught... Could you imagine?
Dude, how desperate do you have to be?
Right?
You're going to invite a murderer into your home.
And this person's married. He's like, I'll leave my wife and take care of you.
Right. How mentally ill is that guy?
Insane.
What's going on with him?
I don't even know, but something seems loose in that head. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Oh, he must be really unhappy with his wife.
Oh my God. I guess, but that does not seem like the appropriate response. Hey, yeah, find out you're a serial killer and come live with me. It's fine.
And no shit.
Well, right. I know. Yeah. I'm just like, Jesus Christ. She told them she caused people's death or helped people die through insulin. I don't think she got into the fact that she believed God was telling her to do so when she was telling people, but she told multiple people that she was responsible for many of her patients' death, and I think she told them that she intended for them to die. So,
guys, put it together.
She had also turned to a pastor in her local church around Halloween of 2014, and that pastor also didn't turn Beth in. According to her, he prayed over her and told her she'd be fine, and that was God's grace.
I know that for priests, when you go to confession, you're not supposed to, like, it's sacred. You don't.
Sure.
It's like...
Doctor-patient confidentiality?
Yes, but...
With a religious...
There has to be an exception for murder.
You would think.
Like, obvious violent crimes.
Morally, how are you going to just let this person go?
Yeah, I don't know, man.
By August of 2016, Beth decided it was time for her to leave nursing and find another line of work. Right before she quit, she randomly messaged Sheila, even though the two of them hadn't spoken in years. She said, quote, I'm restless tonight, hyper about my job, having a hard time getting one of the required skills right. The skill is changing the dressing on an IV line that goes directly to the heart. I violated the sterile field and put things in the wrong place today. She ultimately decided to quit after her 30-day evaluation when her supervisor came to her and told her that they wanted her to start working with kids because they had so many kids that needed help with their insulin pumps, which was when Beth said she panicked and knew she needed to leave nursing. Because what if God wanted her to kill a child? She didn't want to do that. So I guess there's a line somewhere, but... She was obviously okay with killing the elderly patients, just not the kids.
Yeah, it's so... Even people who are insane and evil have a line.
Yeah,
she had... I guess this is hers.
She had a line. It's also interesting because she's going to multiple people to tell them what she's doing. So she's been asking for help, basically, multiple times over, in a way.
Right.
I mean, I guess I don't know what her motivation was for telling these people, but it seemed like she... wanted to stop in a weird way, but like couldn't. I really don't know what to believe at this point, because why would she be telling so many people about what she's doing if she didn't want to be discovered?
Right. And you know, she might not even realize like why she was doing it.
Right.
Sometimes it just, maybe it slipped out. I mean, she's fucked up on the job.
Oh, right. Sure. That could be another thing. She's just drunk and telling someone, or high. Yeah, that definitely could have been a reason why she told someone, but it's unclear. Beth then packed up her car and drove to Quebec because she wanted to tell her parents what she'd been doing. But when she got there, they had visitors from Scotland, so she didn't tell them. She just spent 2 weeks pretending to go to work since she was with her parents. Could you imagine? You pull up to your parents' house. I mean, obviously you can't imagine. This is, you would never do this. But I mean, just picture she's a serial killer, has killed multiple people, and she's going to tell her parents, and she pulls up and they have people from out of town staying with them for 2 weeks.
Right. It like feels like a scene out of a dark comedy.
It seriously, you know? Does. Yeah. And she's like, oh, guess I can't tell you now since the visitors are here. Don't want to disturb the peace.
Right.
Weird.
Well, they came all this way.
Yeah. Wouldn't want to ruin their time with my news. Once the visitors left, she decided she definitely didn't want to be a nurse anymore, and she began looking into how she could get help. She had started to really believe that it was the devil who had been telling her to kill people, and she knew she didn't want to keep doing this. Finally, Beth told another online friend about what she had done and was very explicit about the fact that she had murdered these patients. And this friend finally told Beth that if she didn't get help or turn herself in, she would call the police herself. Thankfully, someone did it.
Yeah, someone with a normal reaction.
Right? How did she find that many people that had insane reactions to her saying, hey, by the way, I'm a serial killer?
Or just no reaction.
That's what I mean. Like, how do you hear that as a person and then not do something about it? That makes no sense to me. So this person had a normal reaction to learning about their friend being a serial killer. And Beth did take this threat seriously. And at the end of the summer, she went over to a friend's house, asked them to watch her dog, and then hopped on a train to Toronto and checked herself into the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, which was when the truth finally came out. She told her psychiatrist that for the last 10 years, she had been dealing with all her anger and negative feelings by killing people. Ethically, the psychiatrist couldn't go to the police. He was bound by doctor-patient confidentiality, but he did urge her to tell the police right away and suggested she write everything down that she had done. And Beth listened to this psychiatrist. She wrote down every detail of what she had done, the names, the dates, the behaviors of the patients, everything. Beth said at first her psychiatrist told her writing everything down wasn't for her to give it to the police, but was just a good part of her therapy and would be good for her mental health. And she did say that after writing everything out, it took a tremendous amount of pressure off of her and helped her really clarify that it wasn't God that was telling her to do these things. It was something wrong with her psychologically that was making her believe that it was God. So she...
Wow, I mean, that's... So she, just by writing it out...
She had some sort of moment of clarity. Super interesting.
Yeah, it's confusing for sure.
Yeah. After writing it all out, Beth walked herself into the police and told them she needed to speak with an officer because she had killed 8 people. I don't know why the 9th one was left out, but she said, I killed 8 people.
Well, I mean, you know, at a certain point, you're going to jail for the same amount of time, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so.
Maybe she forgot.
Maybe. Yeah, it'd been a lot of people.
It is that many.
It is. During her interview, Beth didn't hold back one bit. She gave every name, every detail, and answered all of their questions. I'm not sure if she fully understood the severity of what she was confessing to, because at one point during the interview, while she was talking about her struggles with addiction, and the officer asked her if she was still taking drugs, Beth said no, and that she had a plan to get into AA or NA if she was able to, quote, be out and about. But she said, if I'm not out and about, I know there are AA programs in prison. So it seems like even at this point when she's confessing to 8 murders and talking about her attempted other murders, she still doesn't understand that she is definitely going to prison. She's like, if I'm out and about, I'm going to get into AA and NA. And she's like, and if I'm not, I guess I'll find something in prison.
Yeah, we'll never understand, right?
No, definitely not. But the officer just responded like, it's good to have a plan.
Yeah, like, yeah, because like you're the person who is at the police station.
Yeah.
And she walks up. Yeah, I just need to confess to killing 8 people. Mm-hmm. And then somebody has to sit with her and take all this info down for hours on end.
Yeah. This is the kind of interview that police like dream about, that they give every single detail, a handwritten 4-page confession. Like she essentially did their work for them. She did. I mean, there was no suspicion around her whatsoever. So if she wanted to continue killing and stay concealed, she would have.
Right. But God, I mean, when you're doing the interview, you just have to get her to keep talking, right? So you have to validate or at least not disagree with some crazy shit.
Right.
Right.
Definitely. So he's like, oh, you're definitely going to prison. He's like, well, it's good to have a plan.
That's it is. Good. Yeah. It's great that you have a plan. Mm-hmm. Tell me more about the murders.
Yeah, exactly.
Back to the murders.
She had gone to NA and told her sponsor about what she was doing, and they didn't take her seriously. They apparently thought that she was just joking around when she said she killed people. So they kind of laughed together and then changed the subject.
I guess that is also kind of a more normal reaction.
Yeah. You're
like, there's no way.
Right.
Because also the package that's telling you that they murdered like the person just does not seem
like they would. Extremely unassuming. Like, she just looked like a woman in her 40s, like, just living her life.
And she's a nurse.
She's a nurse. Yeah, exactly. She's in, like, one of the most trusted professions ever. Like, you're literally there to care for people and, like, make them better.
Also, her demographic, like, how many middle-aged women do you hear about murdering people? Like, it's
almost
just not...
none.
Yeah, it's, like, definitely not as common as men, you know?
Absolutely.
So, yeah, it's just hard to believe.
Mm-hmm. In the interview with police, it also didn't seem like she was very remorseful. She was speaking so matter-of-factly about all the murders and was almost trying to justify some of them and even laughed at certain points. She would say things like, it's not funny, but it's kind of funny. And she also talked about the laughter in her stomach after she would commit these murders.
I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play and win from the comfort of your own home with hundreds of slot games and all of the table games you love with real cash prizes. Right now, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 for new users. It's all at SpinQuest.com. That's SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Wow.
She did say that she felt ashamed after certain murders, but not ashamed enough to stop. The officer asked her if she'd toss and turn at night, and like if these murders were keeping her awake and if she felt shame. And she said, yeah, a bit. I felt pretty bad. That was her response.
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to just stop. Like, what do you mean? Yeah, a bit. I felt pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
But like, what does that mean? They kind of contradict each other, no? Again, I ask, what is happening?
Yeah, did you feel bad about murdering people? Yeah, I felt pretty bad.
Yeah.
So really no remorse happening.
I guess like it makes sense because you just kept doing it.
Right. At the end of the interrogation, the detective asked Beth kind of a weird question. He wanted to know, what was her plan? What did she want? And Beth told him, quote, I want to go home, have a good night's sleep. I want to spend Thanksgiving weekend with my family, and I want to be available to the police that intend to meet me. And if I have to come back for trial, I have to come back for trial. I have no plans of leaving. I can surrender my car if you want me to. That's a direct quote from her interview.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty decent question from the cop, but it's also, I don't think it serves any purpose in trial. It's just out of curiosity. Like, what do you think is going to happen right now?
Yeah, I mean, that would make more sense if that was what he meant, but he quite literally let her go.
Huh.
He was like, what do you want? She's like, well, I want to go home. And he was like, okay.
Well, she's not getting away.
She could have. What if she came to her senses and realized what she had just confessed to and fleed? Or like, killed again? She's a very dangerous person.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I don't know how the laws work in Canada. If you can just like, you have to be able to just jail her.
Of course they can jail her. She gave a 4-page written confession and sat there for 2 hours and confessed to multiple murders, even though they needed to look into these murders and like do an investigation of their own to verify. She had confessed. They could absolutely arrest her. They just didn't.
Just in the interest of public safety.
Right. In the interest of no one else being murdered, they should have arrested her. Even if they didn't think that this woman was going to kill again, don't you think you want to play on the side of safety? Like, Jesus Christ.
I mean, you have.
That's insane.
You should have enough.
They do. I mean, I can't stress enough. She gave a 4-page, extremely detailed written confession.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I guess it would have been one thing if she somehow got out on bail.
No.
But they didn't even take her in.
No. She told detectives she was very close with her parents and she needed to tell them everything, and they knew that she had been in the hospital, but they didn't know why. She also told him she intended to go to her AA meetings, clean her apartment, see her friends, and she was ready to face this, but she would love to go home. And oddly enough, she was let go. All she had to do was not go near nursing homes or insulin, and she could go home. She also had to stay with her parents while
Will you pinky promise?
You pinky swear? Do you double pinky swear? Triple dog? Like, Jesus Christ. She also had to stay with her parents while the police continued investigating and while they searched her apartment, which she was upset about because she wanted to clean her apartment and not appear to be a slob, but the police were like, no, you can't touch your apartment.
Lady, this is not how it's going to go down.
But why, at this point, why wouldn't she think that? Why wouldn't she think I can go home and clean my apartment? That's actually true. They literally, she said, I intend to leave and go hang out with my friends and be with my family for Thanksgiving. And I would love to have a good night's sleep in my bed and take a nice hot shower. And they let her. So why wouldn't they let her go clean her apartment since she didn't want to appear to be a slob? Like,
I don't know, man.
I'm floored by this. This is insane. She went about her life for a few weeks as if nothing had happened. And as if she hadn't confessed to the police that she was a literal serial killer. She didn't even tell her friends that she was under investigation for multiple murders, and she acted as if nothing had happened. She even had a fun girls' night out with a friend at a steakhouse.
How did they let her go for 2 weeks, dude?
I would love to know.
What happened here?
And, I mean, she didn't do anything. Like, she didn't flee. She didn't kill anyone else. But the fact that she had opportunity to is alarming enough.
Right.
The police got to work and went through all of the paperwork from the different nursing homes Beth had worked in, gathered all the patient's name and information, and they searched Beth's apartment. One thing investigators found were her poems, which were pretty unnerving. And on October 25th, 2016, Beth was finally charged with 8 counts of first-degree murder. And in January of 2017, she was charged with 4 more counts of attempted murder and 2 counts of aggravated assault. She ended up pleading guilty to all charges on June 1st, 2017, and was sentenced to life in prison. 8 consecutive life sentences. However, since she turned herself in and was cooperative with authorities, she will get the chance at parole after 25 years in 2041. She'll be in her mid-70s at that point, but in theory, she could get out, which is crazy. Because if someone is serving 8 life sentences, they should not be able to potentially get out of prison.
You would think.
She did give a brief apology to the court, but nobody was buying it, especially the families of the victims and the survivors who were there. They didn't think she was sorry. She was trying to gain the sympathy of the court, and it seemed as if she was just finally getting this big thing off her chest, but she didn't really feel bad about it. It's like she knew it was the right thing to do, but she didn't have like the normal human emotion of like remorse.
Yeah, I guess like if we remember back to what really spurred this was a threat from her friend that she told.
Yep.
So then she just did it on her own terms.
Yeah, I mean, she had been seeking care. Like I think she at this point wanted to get help for her mental problems. I mean, maybe she wouldn't have because that was kind of what spurred her to go into the mental facility in the first place. And then her psychiatrist was like, you should turn this in. And ultimately, it was her that made the decision to turn herself in, right? Like, nobody was forcing her at this point, but it's still unclear as to, you know, what exactly made that happen.
Right. But, I mean, she was certainly pressured into doing it.
Yeah, she was. After everything, the Ontario Nurses Association did an investigation into themselves, trying to figure out where they went wrong and how they could prevent something like this from happening again. The families of the victims came to that hearing and gave testimony about how their incompetence led to the death of so many innocent people. Beverly Bertram, who was 68 at the time and was receiving home care, described in her victim impact statement that she felt immense pain, doubled over, and wondered why no one would help her after she was administered a massive dose of insulin by Nurse Beth. She wrote that the attack left her scarred for years afterwards. She was too afraid to go anywhere, and she instead stayed home with the curtains drawn. She said she no longer knows who she is after the attack, adding she's consumed by Wettlaufer and her actions. She said, quote, after the attempted murder, I don't look at people or nurses the same way. Do they know what they're doing? Are they qualified? Who do I call to check? How can this happen in our community? From my perspective as a victim, I had the need to speak today because if I don't speak, there will be no changes to long-term care. The agencies that hire nurses in our communities have to have better rules, more expectations. If they change jobs a number of times, why? Medication errors should not be let to the side. Too many people are alone and there is no respect or kindness toward people in nursing homes, at least not in my home. This is wrong. The people with needs have a voice. Now that we're sick, nobody listens. If there was a change I would like to see happen, that would be respect given, respect for individuals regardless of the roles they've played or will play in the future. And she said something pretty interesting about Beth. She had almost sympathy for her, or not understanding, but something along those lines. She told the court that the same lack of compassion that allowed her fellow victims to die in relative obscurity also harmed their confessed killer. She said, quote, she cried for help many times and none was given. She was not paid attention to, and this is the aftermath of her journey. So maybe not sympathy for Beth, but she's kind of calling out the fact that people who are asking for help genuinely need it and they should get it. So kind of pointing out the incompetence of, I don't know, I guess it wasn't there was some staff members that she told, like, this should have been taken way more seriously and she should have been getting the help that she so desperately needed. But yeah, she almost was like, well, she was asking for help. Why was it not given to her?
Yeah. Well, to be clear, like, she wasn't directly asking for help, but like, no. There were so many obvious signs that she was, number one, not good at her job and endangering her patients. And then also
drunk on the job.
Yeah. Clearly had a problem that was harming her too.
Right.
So yeah, nobody was served.
The son of one of Beth's victims said, quote, I saw finger pointing. I saw people throwing each other under the bus. I saw a lack of compassion. For them to just come and put money and reputation in front of human life is pathetic.
Yeah, bars.
Beth was disciplined several times by her employers at the facility, who ultimately fired her in 2014 due to multiple medication errors, but nothing was done at this point. Like I said earlier, they just gave her $2,000 and then a good reference.
Yeah, like a slap on the wrist.
Crescent Care's closing statements reiterated that the facility never suspected her of her crimes, despite her mediocre work performance. And I do believe that. I mean, no one's thinking she's murdering people, but still.
Do an investigation.
Do an investigation or, like, fire her and actually follow through with it. Like, don't just push her on someone else when you know she's responsible for, at the very least, hurting patients.
Right.
Her incompetence is leading to people almost dying at the very least. Like, at the bare minimum, she's giving them incorrect medication dosage, which is not a small thing.
Right. Yeah. They did the morally wrong thing, but the financially correct thing.
Right.
You know? And you need to have a law that makes that decision not one or the other.
Yeah, absolutely. They also stated that the facility believes there were no systematic issues that, quote unquote, facilitated or concealed the murders, which is, in my opinion, bullshit because they didn't
track their insulin.
That's what I'm
dude.
Saying. That was exactly what I was going to say. They weren't keeping track of their insulin. And so any person or any nurse, rather, could go in there and take it and administer it without repercussions. They should be tracking everything.
Yeah.
So that directly resulted in facilitating or concealing her murders. Like,
also, she was stealing drugs.
Exactly. Yeah, that too.
For herself,
too. Exactly. That was just for her, but
we just didn't notice that either. Also, the hard opioids should be way more under lock and key.
There was a moment where Beth said she was under investigation very briefly for, I believe, the drugs that she was stealing for herself, and like police did come to her home or something and like ask her questions about it. But she was like, I played very dumb. And then ultimately it blew over. There was like one occasion where someone left medication out and she stole it. And then it came back to her months later. And then she just played dumb and then she got away with it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, a multi-layered failure here.
Yeah. Ultimately, after this hearing took place, Justice Eileen Gillies ended up giving 91 recommendations of things that needed to change. Ontario must increase funding and staffing at the province's nursing homes to help prevent future serial killers from harming the most vulnerable. The final report...
Wait.
I'm not going to read 91 things.
Hold on. The first point is I want to be paid more so that there's less chance of serial killers preying on people?
I don't think so. I think
like, that's literally how I read that, is I want more pay and less patients.
No, they needed to increase funding to deliver like these 91 recommendations that she made. So it's okay. Like to put new systems in place, they needed to increase funding. So it's okay. Not like, oh, we're going to pay our nurses more so they don't kill people. Like that's not...
Well, yeah, I was thinking like, oh, do you like want more people around to prevent the serial killers?
No.
Like, and then they're paid more? I don't know. But yeah, that makes sense. You need to have more money to make changes.
Yeah. And nursing homes must limit their use of temp agency nurses and improve how medication is stored and tracked. So those are two of like the bigger
basic
things that she said. She said, quote, "We cannot assume that because Wettlaufer is behind bars, the threat to safety and security of those receiving care in long-term care system has passed. There is no simple fix in terms of avoiding similar tragedies in the future. The offenses were a result of systematic vulnerabilities in the long-term care system and not the failures of any individual or organization within it. Systemic issues demand systemic responses."
Wow, isn't that refreshing? Oh, God.
Uh-huh. Her recommendations to the College Nurses of Ontario to focus on how to prevent, deter, and detect healthcare serial killers, as well as how to create enough awareness about the possibility that a healthcare practitioner could be harming patients. She said, quote, "While the long-term care system is strained, it is not broken." So they had to review the long-term care system and spend the next year acting on these recommendations and deliver progress within the next year. They were going to provide free counseling for the next 2 years to Wettlaufer surviving victims and the families. And Gillies dedicated her report to Beth's victims and their loved ones, saying, quote, "They serve as a catalyst for real and lasting improvements to the care system and safety of those in Ontario's long-term care system. Your pain, loss, and grief are not in vain." And if Beth hadn't confessed on her own, she probably would have been free today. If the voices in her head hadn't made her finally doubt that she was carrying out God's will, she probably would still be killing people. But she started to wonder if all these murders were the work of God or the devil. And ultimately, I think that's also what drove her to confessing.
I think that she would have been turned in eventually.
I hope so.
Her friend said that they would. Mm-hmm. Also, she just kept telling people.
I would hope so, but... with her track record, I mean, she was able to continue for way longer than you would think.
Way too long. It seems like the nursing system wouldn't have detected it. It would have been because she told somebody else.
I think so, too. And because I think the first time she told someone was in 2007.
Yeah.
So the fact that this went on until 2014 is unbelievable, but it did. So it's scary. She's now serving out her life sentence in prison without the possibility of parole for 25 years. And that is where the story comes to an end. But thankfully, she was not successful in all of her many attempts, and 6 people survived.
Yeah.
But it's just really scary because, I mean, nurses are some of our most important people. Like, it's a very important job and very respected and super trusted. So it really gave a bad name for nurses and gave a really bad taste in people's mouths, in at least in this area, who knew about it. And like, I mean, the survivor that I talked about, she was like, "I don't trust nurses anymore." And how could you?
Yeah, I mean,
she's 70 years old and she has to probably have nurses around her all the time. And she's just living in constant fear. It's awful.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's just, it's really tough to have your trust broken like that.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
Violating way.
Yeah, insanely violating. I mean, it's literally the person who's supposed to be keeping you alive and like caring for you. And it was like the ultimate betrayal.
I mean, how do you feel about like doctors or nurses? I know I'm like, I would blindly do almost anything.
Yeah, they're respected and trusted and whatever for a reason. So, and most of them deserve that respect and trust and, you know, love and care, whatever, because yeah, they're doing really difficult work and keeping people alive and doing it really well. So
yeah, they've also have been through an absolute gauntlet of education.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like to get to be a nurse or a doctor requires so much school, so yes. much work, so much determination.
You never would think that someone like that is going to be harming you.
Right. Yeah. So like the level of betrayal, like it has to be on par with like a partner cheating on you. Like, is it worse?
Probably. I'd say so. I'd say it's way worse than that.
Maybe like somebody you're married to. Like, I don't know. I'm just saying that the betrayal of trust is like on par with that,
sure.
if not worse.
Yeah. It's different betrayal. So I guess right. I'm just having a hard time comparing the two, but yeah, no, I totally understand what you're saying. It's a major betrayal and would not be one that you could bounce back from ever potentially.
Yeah, I guess I'm thinking about it because it's such a deep level of trust, but you honestly do not know this person.
The nurse, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
You could have no idea who they are. You just met them. Hi, oh, I'm Nurse Beth.
Right.
I'm going to give you this. Cool.
Yeah.
Do it.
Right.
You know? You have no idea who that person is, and yet the betrayal of trust is on par with somebody that you've known and like bonded with your whole life.
Sure, but
like,
it's
betraying you.
It's also scary because not only are you trusting this nurse blindly, but you're trusting the system in place. Like you're trusting that there's enough safeguards that a nurse wouldn't be able to access medication that could potentially harm you or like, you know, a certain amount. Like, sure, medication can harm you if you do it in the incorrect dosage or whatever and people make mistakes and things happen. But like, she shouldn't have been able to access that level of insulin or that amount that frequently at all. Like, there should have been things in place that were keeping her from doing this and there just wasn't. So,
right.
But I mean, at the end of the day, you also aren't just assuming that your nurse or your doctor or whoever is harming you because that's quite literally the opposite of what they're supposed to be doing and like make an oath to do. So,
right.
Yeah, it's insane. But that is Beth's story. And I don't know what else to say about it. Did you have something else? I'm sorry.
Yeah. I mean, it was refreshing to hear that they did what seems like a pretty thorough review and correction.
Yeah. And like 91 recommendations were made on how to change things and make them better and more safe. So
sure,
hopefully that is fully carried out or was fully carried out. And this could never happen again because this should never happen again.
Yeah.
I mean, that's obviously an understatement, but do you have anything else you want to add?
Now I'm done.
Okay, great. Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, I don't think I have anything else to say about this story. Obviously, we are sending our best wishes to the families and to the victims themselves because nobody deserves this. And I really hope that Beth stays in prison because she does not deserve to get out ever. And I think that's where I'm going to leave it.
Yeah, fair enough.
Okay. What's your good thing? Let's have a palate cleanser.
My good thing is that I had my first full round of golf.
Okay, it starts
today.
Now.
Yep, starts now. The weather's just good enough. Yeah, it was good. I mean, I just love being out on the course and I like to hit ball far.
Yeah, why say many word when few do trick?
Few do trick, that's it for me. What's your good thing?
Okay, my good thing is that yesterday we got to sit outside with some of our friends and enjoy pizza and we had a beer.
Nothing better.
Nothing better.
Tell me what's better.
Yeah, it was really good. And, you know, it's just one of those start of the nice weather, start of the good seasons where you're sitting outside with your friends, you're enjoying some good food and you're having a nice little chat and you're listening to some music. It was good. Good vibes all around. And I would like for that to continue. And it will, which is great. So that's my good thing. But anyway, thank you all so much for listening. I encourage you to go outside and enjoy a slice of pizza and drink a beer, or not a beer, have water.
If you are of age.
If you are of age or enjoy drinking or should be drinking, have a beer. If not, have some water. Have a Diet Coke.
Soda.
Sure.
I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, if you would like to check out our Patreon and hear all of our bonus episodes, head over to patreon.com/nottodaypodcast. If you or anyone you know has a story of survival or something crazy that's happened to you and you would like to share it with us and possibly hear it on an upcoming listener's episode, send it to notodaypodcast@gmail.com. Check out my YouTube channel. You can find me over on YouTube at Steph Today. My second video will be coming out soon, so keep an eye out for that. We post pictures of all the stories we talk about over on Instagram at NotToday_podcast. We have a TikTok that's NotTodayPodcast and a Twitter that's NotTodayPodcast, but the T in the podcast is a 3.
Because that makes sense.
And just keep breathing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That 2-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.